The Pro Tools Expert Podcast with Mike Thornton, James Ivey and Alan Salabank.
Welcome to the Pro Tools Expert Podcast 329. It's the 23rd of July 2018. I'm Mike Thornton.
I'm James Ivey.
And I'm Alan Salabank. Our friends at Audio Deluxe have an exclusive deal offering 30% off Retune from Zeppelin. Retune takes an interesting approach to tuning in that, as well as being a plugin capable of typical pitch correction and pitch quantize duties, it offers a retuning matrix, allowing pitch-based experiments through mapping incoming pitches to different pitches on the output. Check out the link in the podcast notes, and also don't forget to check out the rest of the deals from our partners on the deals page.
Great. Okay, so on to talking points, and these are sponsored by our friends at Universal Audio. Thanks, fam.
Good morning, children. This is Fab DuPont. The Pro Tools Expert Podcast Talking Points are brought to you with the support of Universal Audio.
Do your vocal recordings need more shine? Are you in the market for a new audio interface? Well, if the answer to those questions is yes, now could be a very good time to buy a Universal Audio Apollo Twin as part of UA's Apollo Twin Platinum Vocal Promotion. Buy an Apollo Twin Mark II Solo and get Antares Auto Tune Real Time for free. Buy an Apollo Twin Mark II Duo or USB and get Antares Auto Tune and the Manly Voxbox plugins for free. Or buy an Apollo Twin Mark II Quad and get Antares Auto Tune, Manly Voxbox and the Pure Plate Reverbs all for free. You can find out about this and the other deals that the Universal Audio team are running by visiting uaudio.com or by clicking the link in the podcast notes down there. There. Nearly in one breath.
So, little bit of controversy or controversy, depending on your tomatoes or tomatoes, I guess. Is there a problem with the new 2018 MacBook Pro?
Yes. It came out about 2 months too late. Or did it? Who knows?
Yes. I feel for you because you had to bite the bullet and buy a machine because your other one had died. And, yeah, a few weeks too early.
I think the noise I made pre-podcast was Apple.
Yeah.
Anyway.
However, as I also pointed out, you may have dodged a bullet.
Yes.
Well, you may well have done. As we have talked about in the article, and I'm not really going to go over it in a lot of detail, do read the article. The link will be in the show notes. There seems to be an issue where the processors get a bit hot. Essentially, in layman speak, the clock speed can vary. And as long as they're cool, the clock speed will go pretty fast. But as they get warmer, the clock speed slows down, hence the terminology that's been bandied around about throttling. And it seems to get to a point where it throttles it so much that it's going slower than it should be. And certainly for some of the video people, this has proved to be quite an issue in terms of render times for both Final Cut and for Adobe Premiere. The tests that various people have done have shown this. Now, where are we at with this? Alan, you put in a very interesting comment to this story saying that it's not really all Apple's fault.
Well, yeah, I mean, this is, well, it's sort of turning the gun actually on us because, I mean, we've got a point, I think, where we're just expecting too much from the laptop form factor. Because, I mean, the i9 processors, they're a serious bit of kit and they generate a serious amount of heat. And the best way to accommodate that, to get over this turbo lag that people are experiencing, basically, is to basically have the base rate of the processor running higher constantly in an adequate cooling solution, be it a new Mac Pro or a, you know, standard desktop style arrangement in, you know, in the casing there. And that allows it to run coolly and quietly at the same time, without having to force all the cooling air through really small holes in the side of the casing, which, as we all know, physics, when you push air through a smaller aperture, it makes more noise as it passes through. So that's going to happen as well as being harder to cool. So it's not just happening with Apple, it's happening with all the laptop manufacturers that are putting in these i9 processors. And it's they're designed for short bursts of processing, not sustained working. So, I mean, yeah, I think James has quite possibly probably got the last great MacBook Pro for the moment, I suppose.
Hooray!
I think,
yeah. So, yeah, you may... but it does seem... one of the things that we are working very hard at the moment is trying to find out whether this is an issue for Pro Tools users, because the way that audio and Pro Tools uses processors and chips is somewhat different. And so we are talking to a number of people, software developers and Avid, to see whether the view is that whether this is actually a problem for Pro Tools users.
I'm trying to get some, I believe the vernacular is FaceTime with one through our partners, Jigsaw24. You may remember we did the review of the iMac Pro a little while ago, which turned out to be quite a beast of a machine, if not somewhat pricey. So I'm trying to get the new 2018 MacBook Pro. Again, these are a rare beast at the moment, but they're working on it. I think, interestingly, a phrase that I'd not really taken that much notice of until this article came up. And it's the fact that in the gaming world, a lot of machine, or it seems that a professional machine is now specced as a gaming machine, as what we would refer to it as a pro media machine. Now, of course, there are probably 1,000 to 1, and that's probably a low ratio of gamers to pro audio or pro video people. But it's just quite interesting that, I remember, I think it was my previous range of, even the previous range of MacBook Pros, they got pretty warm, and Apple tried to persuade us they weren't laptops, they were portables. Because the laptop bit meant they got ridiculously hot.
Yes, you couldn't sit them on your lap, that's for sure.
No. Well, tell that to the German guy who decided to do some naked surfing and got second-degree burns to a sensitive area.
I don't know what sort of surfing he was doing. We're not going to judge.
But, yeah, that's the thing, though. It's and I think from an audio point of view, certainly with Pro Tools, and it's going to vary according to what you're doing and which plugin you're using. So, and it does boil down to things like multi-threading. So if you fire up Xform, Avid's Pitch and Time plugin, and set it to work on a big conversion, and punch up your system usage displays from the actual computer, not from Pro Tools, it will show that Xform is churning all its processing through one of the cores on your CPU. Whereas if you fire up something like Zeppelin's Elastique, then do the same operation, you find that it's evenly distributing across the cores. And in audio, generally, being able to fast delegate across multiple cores is actually a better way forward, and certainly it delivers more speed. So in that case, more cores is better than faster individual cores. So it's going to be a varied effect on the audio community, I think, depending on which software they're using, which plugins they're using, what they're doing in the session itself. It's not going to be an easy one to predict, especially if we're going against this thermal velocity boost, which is Intel's term for it, which is second-guessing its requirements and adapting its processing accordingly. But yeah, a laptop's a laptop, though. That's the point. Yeah, it's the last portable I saw was one of those compact X86s. which was just like, you know, had the keyboard on behind, you know, came off the front and there was a tiny screen behind it. I don't know if you remember those from the 80s.
But, no, in a word.
Yeah. So it's, the design principle they say is it's to be as slim and as light as possible. So is that, surely that's a laptop.
Yeah. But one of the things that has come to light, I received a newsletter from Mac Format, the magazine, and the editor was pointing out that he'd been to an Apple-hosted event in Amsterdam where they had a number of individuals demonstrating different software on the new MacBook Pro, including someone using Pro Tools. And we're reaching out to that particular individual at the moment to find out what they're doing. But from what I've been able to establish so far, he has been very successfully running quite significantly sized sessions, as in hundreds of tracks, using an HDX card on an expansion chassis connected to said new i9 six core machine without issues. Now he's very clear to point out he's not someone who can is qualified to talk about the technical aspect of it, but when you're talking about 400 active voices with all the processing and reverb all working natively, as in not using the HDX card, that starts to suggest that this new MacBook Pro isn't too unfriendly for Pro Tools.
The daft thing is, though, I've just gone onto the Apple site to cost up one of these new machines.
Yep.
Mm-hmm.
And there are two main benefits between this machine and the machine that I am currently surfing for the new machine on, if that mm-hmm. makes sense. The processor is one. You can go, and it's another $300 boost to go from the i7 4.3 to an i9 4.8.
Yeah.
The other major benefit, though, is the doubling of the RAM.
Absolutely.
That is, for me, is the big difference, and the fact that you can now put 4 terabytes of SSD storage in this thing if you actually want, and I do mean to double the price of the machine.
Yeah but
£2,800 for
4 terabytes. But if you don't go to the 4 terabytes,
it's still, when you add Apple Care, it's over $4,000. That's a lot of shekels in my world now.
Yeah, but it's no more than effectively you paid for your existing one.
Okay, nods and agrees, but doesn't agree. I have friends in low places, remember. But, you know, I mean, we could run... I've run Pro Tools to the absolute limit on this machine with it not struggling. You know, hundreds of plugins... maxed out the voice count, maxed out the instruments, maxed out the audio with the generic Mac Pro power test session, which was developed by Russ, God, years ago now.
Indeed.
To the point where Pro Tools, the ability of Pro Tools on a single native system has been far surpassed by the power of the machines.
Mm.
Whether you go i9 or i7, it's not going to make a difference, I don't think, to how much you can run. Yes, you can probably run another, I don't know, 50, 60 cases of what name your plugin. But we're talking hundreds of plugins before these machines now start to go, hang on a second. I think we've reached critical mass.
I mean, certainly, by the time everybody hears this podcast, there will be an article on the site where I've done exactly that. I've gone through and looked at it and costed it out. And for a machine with the i9 6-core processor upgrade, the 32 gigabyte RAM upgrade, and a 1 terabyte drive.
Which is pretty much the spec I went for with my i7.
Yeah, we're looking at $3,900 to all intents and purposes, or excluding VAT in the UK, £3,074 sterling.
Still a lot of money.
It is, but when you compare it to the pricing of things like the iMac Pro,
yes,
it's a little more realistic, shall we say.
Yeah, but Liz, James, can you remind me of how much extra it is to push up to a 4 terabyte SSD?
He says, looking at it in front of me, $2,800. I'm clearly on the American site.
4 terabyte SSD NVMe on the open market, £900.
Yes, exactly. Mm. But we all know that back in the old days, in fact, your MacBook Pro, Mike, and my 13-inch MacBook Pro, prior to Retina models.
Indeed.
You bought them with the base spec RAM, and you went onto Crucial's website,
exactly.
And you bought the website RAM from Crucial. Because where Apple can put on Apple tax, they will do.
Yeah, but bizarrely...
But then you can't do that now, can you?
Yeah,
but, no, you can't.
No, you can't. But bizarrely, I again, in the article that you'll be able to read by the time you hear this discussion, I looked at the price of getting basically... I mean, if you remember, when we could change the RAM, we usually had to basically throw away the RAM that Apple sold us.
Yes.
Because you only had two slots. And so in this scenario, 32 gigs of DDR4 RAM, which is what's in these new machines, is pretty well the same price from Crucial as what Apple are charging us to go from 16 to 32. Now, I appreciate they're only selling us 16 gig of RAM, but... what you don't end up with is the RAM that is possibly no use nor ornament, really. I mean, yes, you can try and sell it, but because it's so small, it's...
Well, you actually can't on the new machines because they're sold.
Yeah,
on,
no,
it's
no,
sold,
but, for this, but yeah. I'm, what I'm trying to do is to compare the scenario in the days when we could, as you described, buy a base machine and then up the spec. And obviously that applies also the same thing to the storage. You know, you could buy a base machine with a spinning rust drive and then pull that out and put a decent SSD drive
in
and so on and so forth. And again, when I priced up for the 1 terabyte, 2 terabyte drives, the differential wasn't that much different to buying a new 1 terabyte or a new 2 terabyte drive. I must admit, I didn't do the comparison with a 4 terabyte. That just seemed to be, for me, in the real world scenario, that was just off the planet. But it does strike me that the although, yes, we've effectively got stuff soldered in. I mean, coming back to the RAM, yes, all right, the 32 gig is soldered in, but I'm never, ever going to need to upgrade it because the machine will not support more than 32 gig of RAM, the hardware. So it's not an issue.
Which is a bit odd. That's quite odd.
Yeah.
Because there's certainly not a 32 gigabyte RAM limit on i9 processors or on the latest motherboards.
No, but clearly something in the Apple architecture has put that limit in. I mean, this is the first
probably space.
Apple, yeah,
probably a physical space.
This is the first Apple laptop where we've been able to get more than 16 gig of RAM.
Yes,
and therefore get somewhere closer to Avid's recommendation of 16 gig is the minimum, but 32 gig is really what we prefer. The Mac Minis, the MacBook Pros have all been limited to 16 gig of RAM until now. And I have to say, with the caveat of this overheating, which may or may not be an issue for us Pro Tools users, the new MacBook Pro is very appealing to me, owning a 2012 MacBook Pro, which is now, 6 years old, and starting to misbehave a bit.
Well, and as we have first-hand testament of, could go for a Burton at any moment.
Indeed.
And potentially cost you... I mean, the service plan that I had mine done on 2 years ago was ended by Apple. It's now a non-serviceable machine.
Yeah.
It's a 600 quid replacement for a new motherboard, logic board, call it what you will.
Yeah. This is what I found on my 2011 MacBook Pro, which is why I just gave up on it, because it was not economic to repair, and it certainly wasn't economic to replace it. Really, because, I mean, that's where, you know, my review of the Dell laptop that I got came into play. And that's the thing, because for a third of the price, a very comparable competitive machine, which can be upgraded to 64 gigabytes of RAM.
How's that machine compare in terms of RAM and processors to this MacBook Pro?
Processors it's behind on, but
so it's still i7 in the Dell.
Yeah, still i7s in the Dell, not but in the Dell XPS. That's the i9s, but it's that it's those XPSs which have also been getting the same problems with the i7. Overheating.
Yeah.
So I think this is the thing. The Dells certainly have better cooling than, you know, they don't go for style over function. Certainly, yeah. there's a huge bank of fins at the back of the laptop. Which, you know, if you like the back end of a DeLorean, then you'll probably like. But it's
how many gigawatts of power does it use?
Well, exactly.
So, will the Dell put a 6-core i7 in rather than, you know, because obviously that is one of the options on the new MacBook Pros, is to go 6-core i7 rather than 6-core i9.
I would have to look this up, but the interesting thing actually was that when the i9s first came out, there was a, and also the latest i7s before that, the ones which went to 6 physical cores and upwards. I was working with Scan at the time, Scan Computers, and they were having a very hard time qualifying any laptop to be suitable for audio use.
And what were the issues?
Various, the way that the throttling works because of the thermal demands on it, the ports on it, the support for the ports, you know, because suddenly Thunderbolt 2 laptops suddenly disappeared off the face of the planet, and were replaced with Thunderbolt 3, but then they had to get the support working for that properly. Laptops for, in inverted commas, pro use have been going over a bit of a lumpy time the last few years. And I think it's, and the reason I went for the Dell that I got, I purposely didn't push for the highest spec I could get, because I've got this innate feeling that there is a limit to what we can get out of this form factor, because the previous laptop to the one I've got now was a 17-inch one.
Yeah.
And that certainly was not a laptop. It didn't fit on my laptop.
That's a portable, definitely.
That's a desktop replacement.
Yeah. I've got a 17-inch HP, and it's enormous.
Yeah, it weighed a ton as well. So, yeah. But that's the thing. I think we're all aiming a bit high on the spectrum. And if you say, yeah, but you know, your average accountant or architect isn't going to be using the processing power that a video editor or an audio engineer do, well, think again, because, I mean, go and have a look at your usage specs when you're just running, say, Chrome. Chrome can completely dominate a system's resources.
Yes.
Completely nuke it out, have the fans running in turbo overdrive.
N number of instances of Chrome helper. Yeah. Yes.
So there's just the simplest things can take out your experience on it. I mean, when my 2011 MacBook Pro was getting to the end of its life, I couldn't have Chrome and Pro Tools open at the same time. It just wigged out completely. But that's the thing. I just think we're possibly aiming a bit too high. I think Apple and Dell are possibly chasing the stats too much. I think that they're chasing the headline figures. You know, they're saying, "Oh, we got this many cores running at this rate, peak rate."
Yeah.
I mean, so remember, you know, you used to go, if you went to Dixon's in the 80s, and you said, you know, the big signs, 200 watt stereo system, brackets, peak music power output.
Yeah.
It's the same.
Or you mean like broadband speeds?
Yeah.
There is, of course, moving on to something quite literally more connected, there is another problem with these machines. That's the one I've got, and the new one, depending on whichever processor you put in it.
Go on.
You only have one connection type.
Yeah, the USB-C thing, yes.
USB-C / Thunderbolt 3.
Yeah.
Now, I've done quite a lot of research in this. There is an article that we placed up on the site a little while ago about different connector types and their uses and their pros and their cons and yada, yada, yada. We were sold USB-C as the one connector to rule them all. Is that roughly the right quote thing?
Okay.
There is a problem with USB-C. So I have one of the rather lovely new Arrow interfaces from our friends at Universal Audio, which is bus-powered. It is only bus-powered. It is USB-C powered. I took the cable that ships with the power supply, as in because the power supplies had detachable USB-C, plugged it from my MacBook Pro into the Arrow, and this is a 2-meter cable, and you know what's coming next. It said, this device is not supported.
Yeah, in other words, it's not an Apple piece of wire.
No, it is an Apple piece of wire because it's the one that came with the laptop that connects it when I charge it normally.
Right.
If you use a 1 meter or less cable, it is a supported device.
That's because it's copper, not fiber.
That may well be the case, but... You know, if you're buying an interface like an Arrow, you don't always want it within a meter of your laptop, your computer.
Oh, no, exactly, yeah.
Two meters is not a long cable, is it?
No.
In any stretch of the word. If you want to be tidy and you want things to be permanently loomed in and stuff, 2 meters is not a lot of cable.
No.
I was very, very surprised when I went, hang on, what? There was Scooby-Doo moments and everything. I was very surprised when I found that it was the cable that was causing this not supported error.
Mm.
And of course, you will then be back in the land of cluttered desktops with adapters and all sorts of things. However, if you're smart, you'll get a really good hub type thing like the USB-C one that I have in front of me from our friends at OWC, Other World Computing.
Yeah.
Very, very nice. And it allows you to power off the same cable as you connect to the hub. So you only need to connect one cable rather than two. 50% more efficient, see? Anyway, moan over.
Yeah. I think... Well, go on, Alan.
I like USB-C. I like it. My new phone's got it. And it works with all the adapters that work with my laptop. It's brilliant. And it charges really fast as well. I love USB-C. I think it's brilliant.
Okay, well, on that positive note, I think we probably should move along. James, we've got some competitions.
We certainly do. To help celebrate their shiny new website and the release of 6 new music production and post-production bundles, our friends at New Gen Audio are offering you, yes, you, the chance to win either a New Gen producer bundle worth $499 or a New Gen post bundle worth $899. Choose which prize you'd like to win and enter the competition in the link in the podcast notes below.
Great. So talking point two, we'll have a quick sort of run round of the sort of round the virtual desk about the different sort of compressors, because we posted over the weekend a roundup article about featuring reviews of all the compressor plugins and hardware that we've looked at over the years. And, you know, so what are our go-to compressors, hardware or software? And how do we use them in our workflows? Alan, what about you? What's your go-tos and where do they sit in your workflow?
Well, I mean, as with all my plugins, I generally use what everybody else is using for compatibility reasons.
Yeah.
It's more of a given now to assume that fellow professional users have the HD plan, sorry, the ultimate plan.
Yeah.
And so have the Avid Pro compressor available to them. That's not just a default because of compatibility. It's actually a pretty damn good compressor. Mm. And it can be used on buses or in line. It's very versatile. It's very flexible with multi-channel as well. The other one I really like, which is not strictly a compressor, is actually the Waves L3LL, which is the low latency version of the L3. But because they use a slightly different algorithm than the L3 standard, because to get the low latency, I actually think it sounds nicer. It sounds an awful lot nicer. And with the right tweaking, can really nicely round and fatten dialogues, tame, you know, rogue vocals. Yeah, it's really very handy. It's not just a smash it into the brick wall limiter job. I think that's they're both a really good sounding pair of compressors. I mean, there's obviously Fab Filter as well, which goes without saying. But those are my go tos.
James, what about you?
Oh, I've got a selection of hardware and software and all sorts of goodies.
I thought you might.
On the hardware front, I'm a great fan of the 1176, and in particular, because I don't have a budget for 5,000 real ones, the Warm Audio WA76. If you are looking for an affordable 1176-type compressor, check these out. There is a review on the site. It wasn't included in this article. How dare they? It's up there, and they sound great. They're really usable. I think they sound like an 1176. I'm sure if you've got a bank of vintage ones, you're going to argue. But hey, the other hardware compressor I deeply love is the AMS Neve 33609 Rev N, which is the latest one. Yummy. I mean, it was one of those, I did not want to send it back. The funny thing is, though, having used the hardware, and I think I said this last week when we were talking about compression and stuff, having used the hardware, I now can get the same sound and effect from the software, whereas I couldn't, as in the Universal Audio plugin emulation. Mm-hmm. I couldn't before I'd used the hardware.
You'd worked out where to set it using the hardware, and now you could actually replicate that in the emulation.
It's bizarre, but it works. Now, I'm wondering if that's because of where it is in the chain now, because I've put the 33609 across the master bus of the console rather than the master output of Pro Tools, if that makes sense.
Mm.
It is in a hardware loop rather than just in software. And it just gets me the sound I really like. I suspect, like the both of you, yes, the Avid Pro compressor and the limiter, because we're talking about compressors and limiters, I guess. They're both awesome. Certainly in my post workflow for video, for voiceover and stuff, I lean on them very heavily, because you can lean on them very heavily and they don't seem to break up and give you any artifacts. There's a whole load of stuff. I mean, I think one of my favourite plugins of late has to be the Arouser by Empirical Labs, which is the official modelled version of the Distressor.
Yeah.
It's awesome. It genuinely does make the right noise, because Dave Durr and the team at Empirical Labs were the guys who coded it. I think that's pretty much it. I know I go for things like LA2As and LA3s and even a Fairchild for vocals and things like that, but I probably only just tap them to get the sound rather than actually using them as full-on actual, you know, controlling compressors rather than tone compressors, if that makes any sense.
Yeah, I would have to say I am an Avid Pro compressor fan. It's pretty well my single go-to compressor. There are occasions when I need to tame wayward dialogue, usually in documentaries where things are all over the place, and often music-based documentaries where I've got music beds running all the time and I need a consistent dialogue level, and that's the Waves Renaissance Fox.
Love it. Absolutely
very simple, but you just dial it in, and consistent level comes out, but you don't really hear it, what it's doing. It just does it. So that would be my other sort of go-to dynamics, compression plugin. I have no hardware. Hardware has long since disappeared out of my environment. I work entirely in the box and have done for years and years and years. I think we'll move along because time ticketh away, and we'll take a look at some feedback from the community. Alan Kevin Dallas has been in touch.
Yeah, sure. He says, "Hi, I love the Find of the Week slot and spotted this on Twitter the other day and immediately ordered one. I reckon it's the perfect place to keep an iLock safe with my keys. Until all plug-in providers support iLock Cloud, those of us who move around for work need to transport our iLock and live in fear of losing or damaging it. I thought this might be of interest. Keep up the good work." And he includes a link to a thing on Indiegogo, which is a, it's like a sort of...
key ring box that yes, you add to your key ring. There's also a torch. Yeah.
Yes. a wonderfully practical idea. Very lo-fi, no problems with that at all.
Yeah.
Obviously, there are alternatives to iLock Cloud, one of which I use, which is called Virtual Here. So you can actually form your own cloud and go along with that instead. So,
what do you do when there aren't any clouds, like at the moment?
You wish upon one.
Oh, well done.
I haven't been thinking that one up for ages.
very good. It's a frustration that it's bizarre that essentially Avid are the only people that currently support iLock Cloud at the moment.
Is that because there's a lot of coding and potential security risk involving going over to? Or?
I think there's perceived security issues. My understanding, because I mean, there are security issues for machine-based iLock, but obviously without the iLock, the PACE licensing system. Some software developers will offer the machine-based version, which means you can have your software without an iLock. So it's the computer or the machine that's authorized. And there are some concerns about the finite security, which is why a lot of developers are only offering that version on lower cost pieces of software. But my understanding, and certainly the demos that I've witnessed, mean that essentially that the iLock Cloud is very secure, but it obviously totally depends on having an internet connection. But the other thing, of course, is which is more akin to what Virtual Here does, is the iLock networking licensing, which Avid did say they were planning to support when they released 2018.1, but as of yet isn't yet in place. Now, that certainly would offer a very similar experience to Virtual Here in terms of having one networked machine that can be locked away in a server room. I mean, it's absolutely ideal for sort of educational type establishments, but somewhere, basically one machine locked away and all the licenses are there. And more importantly, if you've got multiple seats, you can manage it so that you can effectively make sure that all the appropriate licenses are available for a lab of computers at a particular time. And then when that timetabled element is finished, you can then reassign them to another place.
Now, I'm not going to show off at all at this stage, because anyone who ever tried to deal with me when I was working in support at Sibelius will know that I had absolutely no blooming idea how this worked. But that is something that was ported into both Pro Tools and Media Composer from Sibelius. We came up with it first. So, hey.
There are options, but having announced iLock Cloud, Avid being the first brand to support it, and yet no plugins supporting it. Yeah, real shame. But certainly for now, if you need a solution right now, then Virtual Here is where to go. But hopefully the iLock network solution will be the next option for larger facilities wanting not to have iLocks kicking around here, there and everywhere that potentially could be acquired by people who shouldn't have them. Okay, let's move on to the questions from the community, and these are sponsored by our friends at RSP Audio Solutions.
The Pro Tools Expert Community Feedback is brought to you with the kind support of RSPE Audio Solutions. Great people and great prices.
RSPE is proud to announce the new ASC Nano Attack Wall. It's a mini version of the ASC Attack Wall that takes all the acoustic benefits of its bigger brother and shrinks them down to fit on your desktop. Get a reliable, repeatable and accurate sonic space that's extremely portable, so you can take it with you when you work on the move or work in another studio. Learn more at RSPE's website with the link below in the show notes. I nearly got one through that one. Nearly.
First question. I think, Alan, you've got some thoughts about this. This is from Sean Rogers. Thanks for all that you do for the music community. I'd like to know if it's possible to use a MIDI translator to set up a Mackie C4 to control all the plugins in Pro Tools 12. Will Pro Tools software allow this to work? Has anybody tried it and produced a template? I'd like to use a MIDI translator to reconfigure the C4 MIDI messages to control my plugins in Pro Tools. Is this possible? I'm running Pro Tools 12.4 on Windows 7 64-bit on an HP Z400 with 24 gigs of RAM. Thanks for any help you can give. Alan, what are your thoughts on this?
Well, I was curious about this, so I took a look online, and somebody on the DUC, the Avid Discussion Forum, has actually assembled a complete MIDI CC chart, which actually might help you in your quest. I can't offer to give any help with actually the programming of MIDI translator, but another thing that is also always really handy is to have some form of MIDI sniffing app on your computer as well. So on my MacBook, I had a really MIDI, a thing called MIDI Monitor, which basically displayed matrix style all the MIDI messages coming in and out of the computer, and it's really, really handy. I mean, I first used it to bug fix trying to synchronize Pro Tools system to a video queuing system over MIDI timecode, and it was absolutely invaluable for that. So my top tip for getting around these sort of issues is definitely get yourself an app that just shows you raw data, what's going on when, and that really helps.
Yeah, and that in conjunction with the complete MIDI controller chart, and we'll put a link to that thread on the DUC. That hopefully will help you, Sean.
Okay, Mike. Matt Swimmer, I think.
I think that's a pretty good attempt.
Yes, yeah, I think. Has written in, do you know what I can do to fix this issue? I get this error message while creating plugin settings. Could not complete your request because no such file or directory. Running Pro Tools 2018.4, and this was a post on Facebook.
Yeah, you don't tell us, unfortunately, Matt, which OS you're using. But either way, I suspect that this is probably a permissions issue. It looks as though you don't have the right access for the plugin settings folder that Pro Tools is looking at. So when you try and create a new plugin settings within Pro Tools, you're effectively writing or updating or modifying a file in the plugin settings folders. And if your machine doesn't allow you to have write access, in other words, you can't create or modify a file, then I suspect that that is the issue. Now, that may be because the user account you're using, and this can apply to both Windows and Mac, is a normal user rather than an admin account. So in Mac world, which I can speak to a slightly more authoritatively, the normal user may not have full write access to some of these files. It's certainly been an issue when users have been trying to network or run Pro Tools on a network machine. So that's my gut feeling. You, any other thoughts, Alan?
On Windows, certainly it's worth trying. If you go to your desktop or wherever your Pro Tools app icon is, and right-click on it and select Run as Administrator.
Ah, yes. Yes.
That unlocks all manner of things. I mean, it used to be back in the days of Pro Tools 10 that if you didn't run as administrator, Pro Tools wouldn't see any MIDI. So that was
a useful feature.
Yes, exactly. So there's various things. Also, one thing I've hit upon recently is that Google have changed the way their Google Drive works. They changed it to a different type of system, which is rather than synchronizing everything to your local space all the time, absolutely everything, you can select what to synchronize locally.
And it's sort of kind of streaming type.
Yeah, it's a sort of streaming type thing. And it creates a virtual drive on your file system called G. Unfortunately, Pro Tools absolutely will not read or write from it.
Wow.
So I have to copy everything from my Google Drive now to a local drive to open it, whereas before I was able to actually save Pro Tools sessions to my Google Drive and run them off that. So there's all sort of things that can go on with that. So check if you're running it off one of these synchronized drives as well. I think it's probably an issue to look at.
Yeah. Okay, moving along. Another one from Facebook. This is Chris Toast Hamilton. He says, I need some mixing headphones. What's good to go for a £200 budget? James, what's your choice of headphones in this sort of budget?
I am currently choosing, and I'm currently wearing, a lovely pair of Audio-Technica ATH-60X headphones. They sound great for both tracking and mixing. They are the only pair of headphones, they're a closed-back pair of headphones, the only pair of headphones that are closed-backed that I've ever mixed on successfully. Normally, mixing, I want open headphones, but with these, they sound great, and they're about 170-odd quid, depending on where you are in the world.
Yeah.
They're light, they're comfortable, even in the temperatures of the baking studio with the air conditioning off. I'm not a sweaty Betty, and you know, they're quite nice. They get my vote.
Yeah, for me, it would be Sony 7509s, which you will almost certainly not be able to buy new anymore, which is a huge shame, or the slightly more current version, the 7510, which is what stuck on my head. Again, close back, but again, it's the 7509s or the 7510s are the only headphones I would be prepared to work with in this sort of environment of mixing when one has to do such on a pair of headphones. Alan, what about you? What's your flavour?
Well, if you're not worried about isolation, if you're looking for a
quality.
Good monitoring source, quality, rather than being worried about being disturbed by loud noises outside or disturbing other people around you, then I would definitely go for a pair of the Grado SR125s, which are open back headphones. They look really retro, but they're incredibly comfortable. I used to use them an awful lot, but the problem is for things like podcast, which is what I primarily use headphones for, they bleed way too much.
Yeah.
So the other one I would go for is actually half that budget, and that's the AKG Y50 BTs, which are actually Bluetooth headphones, but they have an analog breakout cable, and which works just as well. The actual drivers within them are brilliant, very rich sound, and good isolation from the outside world as well.
It is perhaps worth saying, though, that anything AKG is going to become more and more difficult to get.
Is that the case?
Yes.
You mean because of the Brexit
equation? No, I mean because AKG doesn't exist anymore.
Well, they're part Harman, aren't they, as a brand?
Yes, but they've been dissolved effectively. There'll be no new AKG microphones.
Wow.
They've gone.
Okay.
Very sad. Did we
very
miss that
sad.
One?
Very, very sad then, yeah.
We missed that one. Yeah. Okay, I'll put something together about that.
Yeah.
That maybe they're going for their headphone range, because that definitely seems to be
marching full speed ahead at the moment. But
Okay, maybe some more investigation needs to be done. But certainly, AKG Microphones, as was, is no longer.
Mm-hmm. That's a biggie.
That's a it's big news. I thought we reported it. Clearly, we didn't. My head was clearly in the sand somewhere. I will get on that. Do hold.
Okay. Okay, Mike Goldberg's been in touch. Are you guys working directly off your Glyph studio drives via USB 3, or do you work off a high-speed internal work drive like a Western Digital
Velociraptor, like
thank you.
The dinosaur.
What he said. he says that I'm running Pro Tools Ultimate 2018.4 on an HDX Mac Pro 5.1 with El Capitan. Okay, what I thought we'd do with this is just, again, go around the virtual table and just outline quite briefly what we use, each of us use for storage, both in our studios, but also on our portable laptop solutions, because that may be more akin to the sorts of things that Mike is wanting to do. So, Alan, what's your storage choice?
Well, I left Spinning Rust behind a long time ago now. Was an early adopter of SSDs for media, which back then had cost implications, but it was just damned worth it because video doesn't run anything like as smoothly off a spinning drive, and multiple channel audio as well. It's just the way forward. So I have a bank of four SSDs in my desktop system, which are mounted using those caddies systems. Right. So it's a direct SATA 3 connection.
It's sat external to your computer, or are they internal slots?
It's where the DVD drive used to be.
Right.
And there's four drives in the space of there. You can actually hot plug them if you so dare. Obviously not while you're writing to them. it's been absolutely bulletproof. I haven't needed to whip the drives out of this computer because it's gone up in flames or anything. So I can't testament as to the survivability of that. But if I ever need to, it's available to do that. And my Plan B machine has the identical caddies on it as well. So I can just pull out a drive from my Windows machine, put it in my Plan B machine and rock on. And then for my portable, I use SSDs in, Eluteng caddies, which are really quite pretty looking. They're completely transparent caddies. They're pretty bulletproof, and they're USB 3.1, so you get the maximum speed out of the connection as well. Unless you've got USB-C, which James will be avoiding like the plague.
James, what about you?
Okay, so in the studio master machine, I also have a caddy type thing like Alan has with four drives in it. I have four 1 terabyte Angelbird SSDs in there. then I also have four 6 terabyte Seagate Iron Wolf Pro drives, which are the kind of like my daily internal backup, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
So I've got the current project drives, which are the SSDs, the daily backups, which are also my sample libraries and things like that, and kind of, you know, just stock footage that I draw on from time to time. That lives on those. My actual system drive isn't a drive at all. It's a PCIe flashcard.
Yeah.
Because I could. When I'm external with my MacBook Pro, I'm using a host of different solutions by OWC. At the moment, it's a Pro G6 external 1 terabyte drive in a USB 3 chassis. So,
but that's effectively an SSD in a USB 3 chassis.
Absolutely. They're just... I haven't got into caddies and things like that for the portable system. It's just... If I fill one, I unplug it and I put another one in its place.
Yeah.
How about you, Mike?
I've still got a cheese grater MacBook MacBook Pro. A cheese grater Mac Pro. And I in there I've got a certain amount of spinning rust. So my main sort of Pro Tools session front sort of main Pro Tools session drive is one of those. But I have quite a lot of variety of machine of drives, including similar. Well, I've got some 8 terabyte Seagate archive drives, which are my sort of frontline, as you say, sort of local backup solutions. As far as SSDs are concerned, I'm still only using SSDs as boot drives. So my boot drive in my Mac Pro is an Angel Bird because it looks like an Apple drive to the OS. And so just that I just have that security of the Apple talking to it as if it was one of its own. I also have a back, my boot drive backup is an SSD. My external drives are all eSATA. It's eSATA 2 effectively, because again, we're in Mac Pro world. They're all attached to my machine. When it goes to portable, then I have one of the Angel Bird SSD drives in an aluminium case that is bulletproof. You have a look on the site for some of the stories that we've run on Angel Bird products, and you see the videos that the guys at Angel Bird did where they started throwing one of these drives on tarmac at high speed, a long way. Yes, all the paintwork and the aluminium was chipped, but they still carried on working. So Mike, hopefully that gives you some clues and guidance as to the different things that the three of us round the table here do. Okay, let's move along.
The Pro Tools Expert podcast is created using Source Connect Now from Source Elements. Register now for your free account at now.source-elements.com.
If you have ever tried to do interviews over the internet with apps like Skype, you'll know how hit and miss the audio quality and connection can be, and even on a good day, it isn't really good enough for a long-form interview. We now use Source Connect Now, which offers ISDN-equivalent quality audio using a Chrome browser with no software to install. To get your free account, follow the link in the podcast notes.
UJam Instruments plugins are your studio companions. Always on call when you want to write, play and record tracks. Take seat in the producer's chair and tell your player what you need. This means a maximum of musical and sonic integrity and versatility, and a minimum of your precious energy required to get there. Discover our virtual instruments at ujam.com.
Right, Mike, can I please do it? Can I please?
Go on then.
Julian, give us a good one today. It's time for Find of the Week, sponsored by UJam.
Okay, so
it's got to be the heat. It's the heat. It's the heat.
Okay, so what's our finds of the week, Alan? What's yours? It's an interesting name product.
Yes, it's written Audies, but it's pronounced Audacy apparently, and it's the Mobius 3D headphones, which you might have seen if you subscribe to the Waves email list.
I did, yes.
And they are showing off these amazing new headphones, which I actually heard a prototype of at the media production show about a month ago. And basically, they're DSP corrected headphones, so they've got a sort of equivalent of Sonoworks built in, and they've got movement tracking, so they can actually be fed a 5.1 or 7.1 input, and so they track where you're looking. And if you turn your head away from the front, the whole soundscape pans around and tracks your head movements. So if you're working in 5.1 or 7.1, it's like being in a room with a multi-channel surround sound setup.
Yeah, so when you turn to the surrounds, then that's what you hear.
Exactly, that's what's in front of you.
Yeah.
Which I think is brilliant for being able to work in multi-channel on headphones for a start, and they actually sound pretty damn good. I found out when I heard them. They're very good at isolating. They got a decent amount of dynamic range, and the frequency response was very, very nice as far as I could tell. They're going to be £349 in the UK, or you can get them for $399, excluding taxes, directly pre-ordered from Waves.
Very good. James, what about you?
So you're all expecting me to come up with some uber-expensive platinum-coated rack-mounted microphone pre or something, aren't you?
Yeah, well, that's your usual flavour.
Ah, not this time. For those of you who are educated out there, you may or may not know, it is BBC Prom season. And for those of you who don't know what the BBC Proms are, it's I think it's in the region of 40 concerts at the Royal Albert Hall. One every evening, and there's a real variety of stuff, everything from the normal kind of classical repertoire, the Last Night of the Proms, which I happen to have been to. I was in the fourth row of the Last Night of the Proms.
Ooh.
It's one of those bucket list things that I did once. But prom number 7 was a prom featuring, quite frankly, the most amazing multi-instrumentalist I've ever seen on stage, Jacob Collier. I just sat there, and at some points I shut my eyes and just enjoyed it because I was watching it in surround, because, hey, I can. But it was just brilliant. The guy is very entertaining, just supremely talented. 25, I hate him. just a really good watch, a great concert. I would have loved to have been in the audience. And of course, if you do want to go to the proms, you can. You just turn up and queue up and you pay for your ticket. It's on the iPlayer. If you can get to the iPlayer, the BBC iPlayer, it really is worth a watch. If you can't, sorry.
Well, I mean, I can't emphasize more. The proms are always a delight every year because they're just so diverse in everything they cover. I've been to them. I've seen the classic composers. Yeah, I've seen Pete Tong play at the Ibiza proms. So it's just a fantastic range of stuff. We are so lucky in this country to have the BBC. That's what I'll leave us with on that.
The year I went to the Last Night of the Proms, the deal was, I suspect it still is, if you had ticket stubs for the first, for 9 concerts,
that's right,
you could get your Last Night of the Prom ticket early doors. Now, my then girlfriend and I went to the first 9 to get our last night ticket. And I think of the 40 odd concerts, I think I missed 2.
Wow.
I went every day. I think I must have been about 21, 22, something like that. And the job I was doing at the time meant I could finish early and go and queue up and get my ticket. But it was amazing. A whole summer worth of amazing music. But this particular concert definitely stood out for me. Just what an inspiring, I use the word young man, what an inspiring, amazing performer just to watch. And if you check out Jacob Collier on YouTube, I urge you. Awesome. Mike, beat that.
With difficulty. Mine is the plugin that we featured as the Friday free plugin last week, called Typewriter, which is a free contact instruments from the guys at Waves Factory. Now, it's largely looking at the sort of examples and so on and so forth being pitched at music production as a sort of rhythm instrument, but essentially it is a sampled typewriter, old school typewriter, and so for post work it's a very interesting thing because obviously we've got sound effects of typewriters and stuff, but the idea that you can actually, as one would do with Foley, actually type, if you don't have an old school typewriter, you're going to have to depend on pre-recorded sound effects, but here you can play it like an instrument. And so if you need particular rhythms and styles, then for Foley, for post, then you can. And then there's all the extra bits, the sort of ping at the end of the line, and
so you can genuinely play Leroy Anderson's the typewriter symphony properly.
But I would think, yeah. Yes. So yes, that's my find of the week for this week. On that note, it's good night from me.
It's good night from me.
And it's good night from me.
Good night.